The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization has announced 3 new close contact cases of COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough. This brings the total case count to 954 cases in the Kodiak Island Borough since the start of the pandemic, with 52 cases classified as active locally. There have been 39 hospitalizations to date, with one patient currently hospitalized. There have been 5 deaths due to COVID-19 locally since the start of the pandemic. KMXT's Dylan Simard was joined by Kodiak Harvest Food Cooperative's Tyler Cornelis and Cien Allen to discuss the group's long-term plan to bring a new local grocery store to Kodiak. Tyler Cornelis, president of the co-op, says that a recent grant will allow them to kick that plan into high gear.
Yeah, so the Kodiak Harvest Food Co-op was the recipient of what's called the USDA Local Foods Promotion Program grant. And it's LFPP. And those funds are specifically used by the USDA to develop, coordinate, and expand local and regional food businesses, really to create a connection between the consumer that's purchasing the product with the producer that's either growing or creating the product. And so that LFPP project was recently awarded in, October is when we finally found out. And so we're just right in the midst of kicking off the logistical side of that grant implementation.
Cornelis went on to explain how the idea to bring a food cooperative to Kodiak first started out.
It definitely has been, and kind of the initial kickoff was in about 2015 when there was an event called the Kodiak Strong Planning Day, and I can't remember, maybe 30-ish or so people came together. It was an event supported by a program called Healthy Tomorrows, which was a program of Providence, there were some priorities or community priorities that were developed that day, and one of them was to create a food co-op grocery store. And I kind of latched onto that concept and project and was have been involved since that day. My involvement came because I was also working with a project called the Small Farms of Kodiak Archipelago, Economic Stability Through Food Security. And that's a long title for a project that was aimed at starting farms in 4 of the village communities around Kodiak. And so my kind of reason for being involved with the food co-op was thinking, you know, how can these potential, they were only potential and idea farms at the time, and now we're 5-6 years later and they're actually farms that are producing food. But back then, I guess I wanted to figure out a way where we can create a marketplace that they can sell the food in the city of Kodiak so that their reach of customer base is larger than just the population of the village itself.
An ultimate goal of the food co-op is to benefit local producers. Allen explained how.
One of the things that people don't realize from the producer standpoint is that a lot of these larger, say like Safeway or Walmart, the bigger companies that people are used to going to buy their groceries through in other, you know, larger cities. We're fortunate we've got Cost Savers here, which is smaller, locally owned, but it's very difficult for a small scale producer to meet the insurance requirements and some of the packaging requirements that these larger companies require at the corporate level. And so for the co-op, because we don't have that corporate structure and all these rules and, you know, stores across the country that we have to make sure we have a standardized process for, we're able to be more flexible in who we work with. And it allows for us to provide opportunities for those smaller businesses to begin to get their product out there and start to make a profit and become sustainable as a producer or a grower or whatever their product is that they're offering as a business, so that if they do at some point want to expand, they may be able to have the capital to do that And if not, they can still have a market for what they're selling, and it makes sense for everybody. So I think that's one of the really big benefits that we're able to offer for those smaller businesses.
Those interested in learning more or becoming a member of the cooperative can do so at kodiakharvest.org. That's Kodiak Harvest, all one word. Alaska's population dropped by nearly 4,000 people, that's 0.5%, last year, according to estimates released Thursday. It's the fourth straight year of declines and the biggest drop since 1988. Even though more Alaskans were born in the state than the number of those who died, the decline came from people moving away. Nearly 9,000 more people left the state than moved in. These numbers are estimates. The count from the 2020 census hasn't been released yet. The Alaska Supreme Court is set to hear arguments today in an election challenge brought by Republican State House Minority Leader Lance Pruitt. A recount found Pruitt lost his Anchorage seat to Democrat Liz Snyder by 11 votes. Pruitt's attorney says the court should order a new election, arguing that election officials did not do enough to notify voters of a polling place change. A Superior Court judge previously ruled that election officials could have done more, but acted in, quote, good faith, unquote, in trying to notify voters of the change. The judge also said Pruitt had not shown any way that the voter was kept from voting because of lack of required notice. The nation's sole heavy icebreaker arrived in the Aleutians this week for the first time since 2013. As KUCB's Hope McKinney reports, the Coast Guard's Polar Star is preparing to patrol Alaska's Arctic waters, including the maritime boundary line separating the U.S. and Russia.
The Polar Star sits in the port of Dutch Harbor. The ship is nearly 400 feet long and can break ice up to 21 feet thick. Masked members of the 136-person crew form an assembly line as they offload garbage into two large dumpsters on the icy dock. The ship arrived Tuesday for a three-day stopover. It's a pit stop during its upcoming deployment to the Arctic to assert maritime sovereignty and security in the far north.
The Arctic is incredibly important to the U.S. strategically, because of the amount of gas and oil and resources, as well as the fishing stocks, which are landed here on Alaska.
Captain Bill Waitira is the commanding officer of the Cutter Polar Star, which he says is the most powerful ship in the U.S. Coast Guard. Usually, this time of year, this special ice-breaking cutter is on its way to Antarctica's McMurdo Station to drop fuel and other supplies to American scientists doing research near the South Pole. But this year,
with the global pandemic, they were able to cancel the Sealift mission that created the opportunity for Polar Star to come back north again.
This is the ship's first winter Arctic deployment since the 1980s. In addition to the cutter crew, there are partner agency researchers and scientists, British sailors from the Royal Navy, midshipmen from the Merchant Marine Academy, and deck watch officers and ice pilots from the Healy, the Coast Guard's medium icebreaker that's capable of Arctic patrols during summer months. Waitira says the mission isn't only about national security and securing U.S. economic interests. It's doing environmental research. They're partnering with the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute to take water samples and measurements while the boat transits over the Arctic Circle to better understand the harsh environment there. Getting data in the remote region during the winter, Waitira says, is otherwise extremely difficult.
Basically, a heavy icebreaker is built so that it can go anywhere on the Earth in any thickness of ice during any time of year.
Even though the Polar Star was built to break through thick ice, just a month into their Arctic deployment, Waitira says the season has been tough on the 44-year-old vessel.
Breaking ice in the Arctic winter is especially challenging because the ice is so hard. This year, the ice is so hard, it sounds like a car crash. Just twisting metal and screeching noises and shattering glass, it's really kind of disconcerting. There's no danger, but it leaves an unsettling feeling in your stomach.
He says the crew has been working around the clock just to keep the ship running. On New Year's Eve, they got stopped in the ice, and their engineers were up all night working to replace blown diodes and resistors that are usually considered obsolete.
These are parts that just don't exist anymore. We have a warehouse of spares, but when they're gone, we won't be able to run this ship anymore.
That's why Wojtyra and other Arctic planners say it's so important for the government to invest the billions of dollars needed to build new icebreakers in the next decade to replace the Polar Star, which is the nation's only functional icebreaker after a fire damaged the Healy this past summer. The federal government is in the process of commissioning one, and Congress has agreed to build 5 more, but they haven't paid for it yet. Wojtyra says the construction on the first new icebreaker is expected to be completed in 2024. It will be 460 feet long, 90 feet wide, and weigh almost twice as much as the Polar Star.
It's going to be the largest, most complex, most powerful ship that the Coast Guard has ever built.
In the meantime, Wojtyra says the Polar Star's Arctic mission will help train the future generation of Arctic sailors and mission leaders.
This is our chance to really build up that experience and that expertise and hone our proficiency operating in this environment. Because once those polar security cutters are delivered in a few years, we're going to need operators and leaders to actually take them to sea. And we desperately need them to have experience in this environment.
The Polar Star is expected to leave on Alaska's port of Dutch Harbor Thursday afternoon. Wojtyra says he expects they will complete their mission and return to Seattle by the end of next month. In Unalaska, I'm Hope McKenney.
The appointment process to get vaccinated against COVID-19 opened on Wednesday for Alaska's roughly 90,000 seniors 65 and over. As KTOO's Jeremy Shea reports, it didn't go smoothly.
John Palms is 74 years old and lives in Juneau. He decided to get up early on Wednesday to try to beat the rush to get a vaccination appointment. He went to the website that public health officials have been steering eligible people like him to, covidvax.alaska.gov, that's V-A-X. He clicked a link to schedule an appointment.
First, I found a bewildering map. No way to know what to do when I got there.
It's a map of the state with pins for individual pharmacies and healthcare providers that intend to administer the vaccine. Eventually, he found 6 pins in Juneau. Click on a pin, and you get some contact info for each provider and a link to their website. So it's basically a directory, not a centralized booking site like Palms and others were expecting.
It took hours, and I finally figured it out. I signed up, but I had no idea whether I could have gotten an injection earlier someplace else because there's no central coordination of anything, it doesn't look like.
The forms on different websites seemed broken in various ways. In the end, he got an appointment the old-fashioned way.
When I was on the phone, it was impossible on the web.
If you tried Palm's approach with Ron's apothecary shop in the afternoon, you might have heard this.
Due to the high demand and call volume for the COVID-19 vaccine, we are currently unable to take verbal requests at this time.
The message says they don't have any vaccine, but will know more in several days. Juneau Senator Jesse Keel said Wednesday he was hearing similar stories all afternoon.
I've been getting calls and emails and Facebook messages and texts from senior citizens and from some of their children, probably a couple of dozen, I think. A lot of frustration. And I think the department stumbled on this.
That's the Department of Health and Social Services. Tessa Walker-Linderman with the department leads a state COVID-19 vaccination task force.
The bottom line is that we had a limited amount of appointments and a lot of people wanted to make an appointment.
She wasn't aware of any system-wide technical problems. She and other state health officials in a press availability on Wednesday acknowledged it's been bumpy and cumbersome for users. They had considered a single vaccine appointment system, but healthcare providers wanted to use their own. Public health advisor Kelsey Pistotnik explains.
This is a really challenging time for our providers, and they are trying to navigate so much right now. And so I think we really just came from that standpoint of, can we just make one part of this easy for them, that if they already have a system in place that they are familiar with, that, you know, can we do that? But I think we do need to go back to the drawing board a bit here and see what we can do on the user perspective, just to make sure we can button this up a little better so that it's not quite as cumbersome.
They say part of the challenge has been getting more healthcare providers up to speed to administer the vaccine. More clinics, providers, and appointments will be added to the site as they come online. And some communities are stepping in with mass vaccination events. Juneau has one planned for mid-January, if the vaccine shows up. It would be the first in the state. Health officials say Anchorage, Matsu, Fairbanks, and Kenai may follow. Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink says the decision to open up this broad tier of eligibility for Alaskans 65 and older came last week, as demand from the last tier was falling off and vaccination appointments were opening up.
Do we want to be able to do this a bit faster? It's going to mean it's going to be a rough week and it's not going to have enough vaccine. And people are going to be frustrated because we would love it to be perfect. We would love for everyone to have spots available and all be able to set and roll out. But we also don't want vaccine just sitting there with administrators who are being able to administer it without moving forward.
For some perspective, she says this is only the third week of vaccinations, and Alaska is fifth in the nation for vaccinations per capita. She also offered an apology.
We understand that it's an imperfect system, and we are sorry for that, and we are constantly trying to improve the system.
John Palms, the exasperated 74-year-old, he has an appointment set for next week. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Princess Cruises announced Wednesday that it was pausing all operations through at least May 14th. The Carnival Corporation subsidiary normally sends its first cruise ships to Alaska in late April. The Centers for Disease Control still warns against sailing on cruise ships with its highest risk rating. But this season, it'll give local ports the authority to approve COVID-19 mitigation plans drawn up by individual cruise lines before they unload passengers. Coastal communities across Alaska continue to work on establishing protocols on how and when they will be able to return cruise ships to their ports.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Halibut updates for the IPHC annual meeting, and Eastern Canada aims to throw the big ones back. More after this.
Seafood Auction says thanks to longline fishermen and seafood buyers for a successful 2020 season and looks forward to working together again in 2021. Learn more at seafoodauction.net.
Halibut catch limits for this year will be revealed on January 29th, the final day of the International Pacific Halibut Commission meetings that will convene virtually starting on January 25th. A preliminary review of the 2020 fishery shows that the total catch for the U.S. and British Columbia topped 35.7 million pounds, down 11% from 2019. Of that, 63% was taken in commercial fisheries, or 22.3 million pounds. Alaska fishermen took nearly 16 million pounds, 7% below the catch limit. Recreational fisheries took 17% of the total at 6 million pounds. 3% went to both subsistence and research, or 1 million pounds for each. Over 5 million pounds of halibut was taken as bycatch in other fisheries. Homer got the biggest chunk of the halibut landings, 18%, or nearly 3 million pounds. Dutch Harbor came in second for landings, followed by Kodiak, Juneau at 1.3 million pounds, outpaced Sitka at 1.1 million pounds of the total halibut landings. On a related note, a study will soon be underway on Canada's east coast to determine if throwing back big fish will help boost the Atlantic halibut stock. The biggest halibut are usually the female breeders. The CBC reports that Canada's Department of Fisheries and Oceans and the Atlantic Halibut Council are collaborating on a $4.2 million study that, starting this spring, will track 150 halibut that are outfitted with satellite tags and followed for 3 years. The study could result in a maximum size limit for Atlantic halibut. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
KMXT's Island Messenger, supported in part by the Kodiak Daily Mirror, your hometown newspaper since 1940. Now online at www.kodiakdailymirror.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 8th day of January, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 9:49. It will set again at 4:46 this afternoon, giving us 6 hours and 56 minutes of precious daylight. That is a gain of 2 minutes and 34 seconds compared to yesterday. Currently 35 degrees here in Kodiak, and we're looking for scattered rain and snow showers for the rest of the afternoon, going to maybe just scattered snow showers, cloudy skies overnight, gradually becoming partly cloudy, low of around 27 tonight, east winds to 10 miles per hour. We'll turn to the south, go to 15 miles per hour after midnight. For Saturday, we're looking for snow showers before 1 p.m., then rain and snow showers between 1 p.m. and 4 p.m., then rain after 4 p.m., kind of the weather we've been getting, high near 38 on Saturday. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 4:15 this afternoon. That will be a 0.7-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 10:33 p.m. of 5.87 feet. Over on the west side, these are Uganic Pass tides. You have a low tide coming up at 4:37 p.m. of 1.3 feet, followed by a high tide at 10:55 p.m. of 12 feet. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 982 millibar low 40 nautical miles east of Kodiak City will move to 120 nautical miles northwest of Kodiak City and go to 1,000 millibars on Saturday morning. It will then move inland midday Saturday. A 977 millibar low over the North Pacific Saturday will move to 120 nautical miles southwest of Kodiak Island and go to 958 millibars by Sunday morning. Result of all that, we do have a gale warning Saturday for Barrens Island East. East 30, becoming south 25 in this afternoon. Seas to 16 feet and rain. For tonight, south 25, seas to 11 feet. And for Saturday, we're looking for southeast wind to 25 knots, becoming northeast 40 knots. Saturday afternoon in Barrens Island East, seas building to 17 feet. A little closer to home, Marvin Island is Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory through Saturday. Southwest wind to 25 knots right now and seas to 12 feet. For Saturday, look for east wind to 20 knots, turning to the northeast and going to 30 knots tomorrow afternoon. Seas building to 15 feet tomorrow afternoon. And for Saturday night, east wind to 35 knots and seas to 20 feet, east side offshore. For Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory today and Saturday. West wind to 25 knots right now and seas to 5 feet. For tomorrow, look for variable 10 becoming northeast, increasing to 25 knots tomorrow afternoon, seas building to 10 feet tomorrow afternoon. And for Saturday night in the Shelikof, northeast wind to 45 knots and seas to 20 feet. So seas to 20 feet on Saturday night on both sides of the island.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.